I hit the ball to the right of the first baseman and beat it out. And I figured, well, the guys back around the Clover Farm store back home, it looked like a line drive in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next time up, I got a little braver and I put that bat back where I usually kept it and got another hit between second and third. I think it was a sharp ground ball. And was really thrilled to think that I got two hits off of Bob Feller. Now, the first time I hit against Bob, of course you know he had the blazing fastball. I had two balls and no strikes on me, and I got the sign, you know, the take sign to take the next pitch. He threw me a curveball that I think exploded. And I thought to myself, even if I was hitting, I don't think I could even touch that pitch. The ball just exploded on me. And he really had great stuff. And what really made it good is I could, he was up there before I was. I guess with his blazing fastball and his good curve, he was also wild enough that people were afraid to take a toehold at the plate.
How about Bob Lemon and Early Wynn?
Bob Lemon had good luck against me. Bob was kind of a guy that he could start that ball outside. It's a little curveball outside, and where a hitter, being a left-hander, would give up on it. It looked like it was going to be a ball, and it would just catch that corner on me, catch the corner. Bob had threw, of course, that good sinker and everything, and it was a very fierce competitor. Early Wynn, I played against him when he was with the Washington Senators, and then he went to Cleveland. I had pretty good luck against Early. I could follow him better and do better against him than a guy like Lemon, who moved the ball around inside and outside.
How about Eddie Lopat and Allie Reynolds?
Eddie Lopat, of course, I played against Eddie Lopat when he was with the White Sox. And Eddie later on really become a big winner and everything with the Yankees, and of course I wasn't playing then. I had pretty good luck against Ed. I didn't hit that much against him because, if you remember, that's about the time they started the two platoon guys. If a left-hander pitched, then you didn't get to hit against them. Yeah, even if you had two hits and they brought a left-hander in, they put a right-hander in, see? So, but I got to hit against Eddie. In 47, I was hitting over 400 one part of the season. And they kept writing in the paper that the manager didn't play a 400 hitter, league-leading hitter, against left-handers. We went to Chicago for a doubleheader, and they started left-handers against us. I played both games. I think I wound up with 7-for-9. In one of the games, Lopat pitched. I had a couple of hits off of him and hit a home run in Comiskey Park off of Lopat. So it really made the manager look like, what the hell is happening here? Why didn't you use him before?
Wasn't supposed to work out.
But I just happened to have a real good day.
Tell me about the umpires. There somebody that sticks out in your mind? Maybe it was a good ball, a strikes umpire? Anybody that behind the plate you knew were going to get a fair shake? Or was there somebody that maybe the Detroit Tigers, or maybe you in particular, had a running beef with?
Well, no. When I first came up, Al Summers was umpire. The first time I went in the Yankee Stadium, Bill Dickey was catching. I was called out on strikes the first time up, and all I said to the umpire, I thought the ball was high. When I come up the next time to hit, the umpire said, kid, Bill Summers was his name, kid, I missed that pitch on you. And Dickey was down here, and he says, he was right down the middle, and I looked down at Dickey, and Dickey winked. Now, Bill Summers said, no, I just wanted the kid to know that he doesn't have to swing at those kind of pitches. I always remember that. That was my first time that I ever said anything to an umpire. And then, of course, we had Art Passarella. I knew him through the minor leagues. And, you know, you felt pretty close to them. When I broke my shoulder, they had a big umpire. Oh, what the heck. That when I got up, he said, move your arm, and I moved it. Here, he roomed in college with my high school coach, and he knew the high school I went to. He said, you can't hurt anybody from Redstone Township High School. But it was broken. It was broken. And what the heck, this guy played pro football, too. I can't think of it right now. But the umpires were, you got to know there were some of them, like they said, Runge, pitchers liked him because he was a pitcher's pitcher. He would give him the corner and maybe a little bit off it. And so you got to know those guys and how they called pitchers, and rather than take the third strike because you thought it was outside. Now, I see games now on TV, of course, that I think was a strike right down in there and everything, but see ball. And they tell me that TV isn't always that true. And that was your angle and the way you're watching it.
Strike zone, in your opinion, has it changed? Is it?
I think the strike zone has shrunk. Has shrunk. It's supposed to be from the knees up to the letters. Mm-hmm. Now, a pitcher has to get that thing from the belt up to the letters, you know, in there. Pitchers really have to groove that ball pretty good, or have a guy go after a screwball or a sinking slider and all the new pitches that they come up with now.
Did you ever get thrown out of a game?
No, never. No. Never.
Well, that's very commendable.
Yeah.
traveling. Now it's the best hotels, and it's all airplanes, and it's this, that, and the other. What was it like?
Well, whenever I first came up, it wasn't airplanes. We traveled, and of course, I really always enjoyed getting on that train as your berth. And if you were a starter, you got a lower berth. And if you weren't a starter, you got the upper berth.
And that was why? They didn't shake as much, or?
I guess so. They took care of those starters much better than the lower berth and so forth. I always enjoyed on those train rides, they get up in the morning and go back to the diner. It seemed like their coffee and their bacon and eggs and everything were really wonderful. And to sit there and to eat and be looking out the window as you're going through the various countrysides and towns, I always enjoyed that. And then, of course, they got to where they started to fly. And I, as far as I was concerned, I flew very little in my years as a player. Mm-hmm. It was after I went back up as a coach that I was flying.
How about, what kind of effect did it have on your wife and then later on your kids, you being away from home as much
as you were? Well, it had to be tough because that's the one drawback about baseball, that you go to spring training, and especially if your kids are getting to be an age, whenever they hadn't started school or anything, they went with me. Now when they're starting a school, rather than take them out of school and put them in this school and in that school, they stay home until the season starts and school's out, and then they would come out and join me. Mm-hmm. It's not only hard on your family and kids, but I think it's hard on the player, too. to be away from home all that time and not see your wife or not see your children. But my wife, of course, was from back here in the coal mines and everything, and understood very well, you know, that was my job. And I spent awful lot of time away from home, and she did a wonderful job raising my kids while I was away.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she always threatened them that she was going to call me if they did something.
What about, you know, equipment nowadays? You know, I watch a baseball game. It looks like the outfielders have bushel baskets attached to their arms to catch these baseballs with. Tell me about the equipment that you had to play with, the bats and the baseballs and the gloves and the uniforms and even down to the playing fields and the locker rooms.
Well, I think that the gloves today and everything, of course, they are much larger. My glove is just more, it looked like an infielder's glove, I guess, what they call an infielder's glove, a smaller glove. But it wasn't a whole lot bigger than what your hand is. In fact, the first glove that I used in the major leagues, my wife had it bronze, like you do baby shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's hanging in there on the wall.
Take a look at that.
And it was, whenever you caught it, you really had to catch it. You weren't giving it that one hand slap and everything else. You caught with both hands. You caught that day with both hands to make sure you had it. Then they come up with a guy was going to fix a web in some of the players they could fix a web in your a bigger one. There's a rawhide one. Well, that baby there, you could go along and snag balls that ordinarily you couldn't do it. But then they outlawed that web, so he had to undo it.
Mm-hmm.
And take the glove as it was made. Clubhouses, of course, over the years, as you can see, as a player, there was nothing elaborate like you see the clubhouses today. My goodness, they're just out of this world. They have everything in them. All the exercise machines and things that you would think of are off to the side. Detroit's clubhouse, nice clubhouse, but that's what it was. It was a clubhouse. And they had a big table there with a big bone on it. It looked like it come from some kind of a steer, but they said Ty Cobb, and they used to say about bats, were bone-rubbed bats,
mm-hmm.
that he rubbed his bat on that bone that was on the table, spiked down on the table, and is probably still in a Detroit clubhouse. I think that there's probably not much difference maybe in the bats today, although I think the players are maybe using lighter bats and with a hollowed out bottom.